السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم، أما بعد. علماء کرام، respected brothers, our sisters listening over receivers. Alhamdulillah, to some extent we fulfill some of the farais, some of the obligatory duties, and a number of us seem to be a little concerned about the wajibat, as we were concerned when it came to the qurbani of Eid al-Adha, or as it came to the Hajj that so many people from around the globe, on whom Hajj was farz, they considered it as a duty and went for Hajj. May Allah tabarak wa ta'ala accept the Hajj of each and every Haji, make it maqbool, mabroor, accept their du'as and the du'as that they made for the Ummah at large. So as far as the obligatory duties are concerned, namaz, roza, zakat, Hajj, although there is great negligence if you have to look at the Ummah around the globe, but a large percentage still, or some percentage still are concerned, and they do undertake these obligatory duties. The problem is that after undertaking the obligatory duties, most of us are satisfied that we have done our duty to Islam, that we are true Muslims, very good Muslims, because we performed our salat, we gave our zakat for the year, we fasted in Ramadan, and we even undertook the pilgrimage if it was farz and obligatory. The area that is most neglected is the area of adab and akhlaq. That is the most neglected area, which we consider to be very, very trivial, nothing really important in one's life. If we do it, well and good. If we don't do it, there is no problem. Whereas the obligatory duty is the huquq of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, if he wishes, then he can even overlook. But when it comes to our relationship with people, the moment the person is born, straight away he has someone that's his father, someone that's the mother, someone will become his aunt, someone will become the uncle, someone will be brother, someone will be sister, someone will be a neighbor. As the person grows up, then the person will get married, somebody will be his wife, then someone will be his father-in-law, some mother-in-law, and it goes on and on like that. When the person comes to the masjid, there are different musallis there, people in the congregation with whom he may not have any kind of family relationship, but they are Muslim brothers. They have come to the masjid, so they've got rights over him. It goes on like that, and this is the area that is most neglected. And we take it for granted that if we have made our namaz 5 times, and as it is, we know what kind of namaz we make. But we've considered that as perfection in our lives. Our mashayikh, if we have to look at their lives, unfortunately now things like khanqa and things like majalis or zikr and other things that take place, it has become the end. As if that is the end of all things. The same when it comes to tabligh and dawat, the same when it comes to madaris, when it comes to masajid, across the board, our organizations, which are Islamic organizations, so we don't look at just any one particular group. If you have to look at all these different Islamic organizations and societies, and we look at ourselves, then there is such amount of negligence when it comes to this aspect of adab, akhlaq, don't cause any inconvenience to others, which is an important teaching of Islam. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam mentioned that al-imanu bidhum wa sab'una shu'ba afzaluha qawlu la ilaha illallah wa imatatul adha anit tariq wal haya'u shu'batun min al-iman aw kama qala alayhi salatu wasalam. So one of the branches that has been mentioned there, the lowest, the closest, is that the person removes that which causes any kind of suffering, any kind of pain, any kind of difficulty, any kind of inconvenience to another person. There is no question there of causing inconvenience to a Muslim. It's not mentioned Muslim there. Anything. If the person is just throwing a banana peel, the person is throwing dirt on the road. Now we will say, what has this got to do with Islam? Sometimes there is a function and ice creams are served. And then just go and look outside the boxes that are scattered around, if it is boxed ice cream. And if it is wrappings, then see the papers that are thrown around. See the dirt that is thrown around in the pavements and in the streets and outside the masjid. Now we don't consider these things as anything important. The same when it comes to our parking of cars, when it comes to other issues, we don't regard this as something important. Even when it comes to the control of our loudspeakers and the sounds and the volumes, there too we have a hadith of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. We have authentic traditions reported. As Aisha radiallahu ta'ala anha, we know that her house was just next door. The masjid of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, next to that was her house. Now one person used to come and used to give bayan there. He used to give bayan. And the bayan used to be very loud. The congregation that was there, for them it was sufficient. They could have heard his voice even if he spoke softly or controlled his voice. But he used to scream and speak very loudly. So that Aisha radiallahu ta'ala anha complained to Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala anha. I'm just giving you the gist. Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala anha reprimanded him and stopped him from giving bayan there. After some time, again that person came, because Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu had told him that either speak softly or stop the bayan. Now he came again after some time and started speaking loudly. So Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu said, now if you don't stop, you'll see this whip. I'll break this stick on your head. Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu was not someone that whose word could be taken lightly. So what lesson did he give to us? That if the program is, for example, for the congregation that is in the masjid, so now that's all you need, the sound which will be sufficing for the people in the masjid. When it comes to our azan also, how many times I have said that when we receive complaints or people write in the newspapers, then we get upset that they are stopping us from an Islamic duty. Yes, if the muazzin had called azan at the top of his voice without loudspeaker, and then if somebody was objecting, we could have said that was our Islamic duty. But when we have 15-20 masajid in one area, and especially at Fajr time in many places, go to the Transvaal and other places, Fajr time from all the speakers you will hear the azan as if we are living in Makkah Sharif or Madinah Sharif. Now when our Fajr is 4 o'clock, and then going to the masjid and see how many people. I was in one city, I'm not going to mention the name, but we went for Fajr Salat. When I heard the speakers from all sides, I thought there must be plenty of people in this masjid, large masjid. And Fajr was very early there, 4 o'clock in the morning. And there were only 3 people there. Only 3. So what are we trying to say? Yes, Sharia gives us rights, but not that we trample upon the rights of others after that. There must be a control. And this is the effort that was made by our mashayikh. Adab and akhlaq. We do not gauge a person about his akhlaq, or a person's status is not gauged by the kind of car that he drives. The beauty of the car is not something that means that this person has also got that kind of akhlaq. The beauty of our clothes does not mean that we've got akhlaq also of that kind. The beauty of anything that we possess, that is not the gauge. In the eye of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, it is what is the akhlaq of the person. Islam is not only beliefs, Islam is beliefs, ibadat, mu'amlat, mu'asharat, our dealings, our etiquettes and everything else. Now we cause so much of emotional pain sometimes to people. So much of emotional hurt, and we don't even consider that as hurt. In fact, as Mufti Shafi Sahab rahmatullah alayh, he used to say that even if a thing which is supposed to be at a certain place has been used by someone and then not replaced. For example, there is a torch or there is some kind of brush or some kind of broom or anything else or towel or anything that is used by the people of the house. and the people expect to find it there. Now, if the person used the torch, or if he used the sandals, or if he used something else, now it's in his house, he's not talking about outsiders. Now the person did not replace it or go and place it back in the place from where he took it. He says, if the other person is going to be inconvenienced, this person will be questioned about it. He will be questioned about it because you inconvenienced the other person. Now that person, suddenly the light went off and now everybody is sleeping and now he's in search of the torch. And everyone knows that the candle is kept at a certain place, the matchboxes are kept at a certain place, the light is kept at a certain place. Now this person goes in the dark and he searches for the candle. Now he doesn't find it there. Or he goes in the dark and he searches for the torch where he normally knows he's going to find it. But now he doesn't find it. So these are things that we don't consider as anything important. Whereas these are the very, very important issues because that's where we are interacting with people. And non-Muslims, what are we going to show them? Are we going to tell everyone, now come to the masjid, I'm going to show you what beautiful namaz I read. And that I also read tahajjud, you must come 3 o'clock in the morning and see how I read tahajjud. Are we going to call the non-Muslims to show them our tahajjud? Or you tell the person that I am a very particular person, even the sunnats I don't leave out, ishraq namaz also I make. So you must come to the masjid and come to my house and see how I make ishraq namaz. They're not going to see that. They're going to see our relationship with people. Therefore one poet beautifully put it. لَيْسَ الْجَمَالُ بِأَثْوَابٍ تُزَيِّنُنَا بَلِ الْجَمَالُ جَمَالُ الْعِلْمِ وَالْأَدَبِ لَيْسَ الْجَمَالُ بِأَثْوَابٍ تُزَيِّنُنَا بَلِ الْجَمَالُ جَمَالُ الْعِلْمِ وَالْأَدَبِ لَيْسَ الْيَتِيمُ قَدْ مَاتَ وَالِدُهُ بَلِ الْيَتِيمُ يَتِيمُ الْعِلْمِ وَالْأَدَبِ. The gist of which is that the beauty of the person is not in the kind of clothes that he is wearing. The beauty of the person is in not in the clothes that he is wearing. لَيْسَ الْجَمَالُ بِأَثْبَابٍ تُزَيِّنُنَا. The clothes with which we adorn ourselves, that is not our beauty. Jamal and beauty is ilm and adab. The person has got knowledge and is making amal on that knowledge and he's got akhlaq, he's got good character, good behavior, good morals, good etiquettes. Then that is the beauty of the person. And indeed, the person who loses his father while he is still a minor is a yatim. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam has given so much of virtues of the upbringing of a yatim and caring of a yatim and an orphan child. But he says, in reality, the yatim is not only that child. The yatim is that person who does not have ilm and adab. When we do not have the knowledge and we do not have adab, etiquette, morals, behavior, that is the real yatim. Hazrat Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanvi rahmatullah alayhi wa jaddadi millat. He gave khilafat to one person. And his khilafat was not just person became bayat today and khilafat tomorrow. He is to test the person, put him through all the paces. And when he is quite satisfied and happy that this person has now been disciplined, then sometime he gives the person khilafat. Unlike today that it is being distributed like toffees, as I always say. And the only thing that we know is make so much of zikr of this tasbih, so much of zikr of that tasbih. But the akhlaq of the person is not rectified. Yes, sometimes the shaykh does his maximum, he tries to rectify, but if the person doesn't change, then he hasn't got a magic wand. We are ummatis of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. Many people say that so-and-so is the murid of this one and that one, or so-and-so is an alim, or so-and-so is a mufti, or so-and-so is a qari, or a hafiz, or a haji, but he hasn't changed. So if we are saying that this person has got these shortcomings and weaknesses, so then what about we being ummatis of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam? So will we blame Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam then because of our weakness and our actions? Can anybody say that it was the weakness of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam that his ummatis came out like this? That ummati was a drunkard, that ummati was a womanizer, that ummati was taking interest in gambling and he was doing all kinds of haram. Nauzubillah. Will we say what kind of Nabi was that his ummatis came out like that? We will blame ourselves for it. So like that, he gave khilafat to this person. Now on one day, this person came and he had his child with him. So he asked him, he says that, what is the age of this child? He said, age is 13. So he said, the ticket, did you pay full ticket or paid half or what? What did you pay? Because in those days, I don't know now, that if a child was under 12, then he used to pay half of the fare. So he said, no, he was honest. Now this was the beauty, that these people did not speak lies. I mentioned in the Eidgah also that there is something that is a major, major problem in our society, that there is a truthfulness of death. There is a truthfulness of death. There is a death of truthfulness. There is a death of truthfulness in our life. That truthfulness which is supposed to be in the life of every Muslim, there is a death of it. Now we can't even revive it. If we say that it was gone down a little, then we'll say the patient was a little sick, now we revive it. But unfortunately, it seems to be just increasing, increasing and increasing. Now here he didn't speak a lie. As I mentioned about that Sahabi, that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said that if anybody is not in talking terms with any Muslim brother, sister, the gist of that Hadith Sharif, then he must leave this gathering. Out of the 124,000 companions plus minus that were in Arafat, only one person got up. He never felt shy also that I am getting up so everybody will look at me and say, well, this person seems to be not in talking terms with someone. But he went, he asked his aunt for maaf, she forgave him, he forgave her, and he came back again and he reported to Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam that this was the reason why I went. And I mentioned clearly that there was no question of lie. It was not that in that congregation there were lots of others who had also the same weakness and sickness, but they were lying to Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, who could have lied? Allah Ta'ala would have sent Jibreel alayhi salatu wasalam to inform him. That was the truthfulness that they had in their lives. Every Muslim had sadaqat, zahiri and batini sadaqat. So here he said clearly, he said, yes, I paid half. He said, why did you pay half? He said, because he looked like a 12-year-old. He was honest. He said that he's 13, but he looked like a 12 or under 12. So he took away the khilafat from him. He said, you are not worthy of this responsibility. I made a big mistake. If somebody told him that I didn't read this wazifa last night, or I didn't fulfill my ma'mulat, or I was unable to make tilawat of the Quran Sharif for a few days, then he would have felt sorry for the person and made dua for the person and said, well, okay, in any case, you didn't read for so many days, now start reading. But in these type of issues, he did not hesitate and delay. Immediately he took away the khilafah. They said, you're not worthy of this responsibility. As the Shaykh Zakaria Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, one person, an alim of great caliber, he was given the responsibility of writing the letters. Hazrat used to dictate and he used to write. But he was taken to secrecy that he must not reveal the information that is in those letters to anyone. Because of his old age, now he used to dictate. So this person happened to reveal what was in the one of those letters to somebody. The moment Hazrat Shaykh came to know, he took away the khilafat, he took away all the letter responsibility he had given to him, and Hazrat Shaykh was very, very upset with him. So these are the things that we do not take in consideration of. One of the issues that I was going to discuss, but unfortunately the time runs very, very fast, where we don't take into consideration the rights of others is when it comes to our mayyats and funerals and janazas. I mentioned this on Saturday night and I'm repeating that indeed if somebody has passed away, then it is our duty to convey our sympathy, our condolences. But at present the trend that is there, that one person passed away, now we take our wives, our daughters and our children and everybody and we are there at the house. Why? Because they are related. Or why? Because they are our neighbors. Or why? Because they are our friends. Now that janazas also are delayed so much just because some person is coming from Cape Town, somebody is coming from Germany and from Timbuktu and Honolulu, so therefore we are going to wait and wait and wait. We are going to hold up the entire congregation, even if it means we are going to make the janaza midnight, yet the person has passed away in the afternoon. Now we don't take any consideration of all the others who have come now. Everybody is there. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam has said that when the janaza is ready, the things that he said must hasten and don't delay. One of it is when the janaza is ready. Yes, if there is a delay because of rain, delay because of post-mortem, delay because of documentation not being ready or some other reason, then it is acceptable. Otherwise, within 3-4 hours, a person can generally bury the person that has passed away. And how easy it makes it for the family. Now here, if the person has passed away at 11 o'clock, and now we say, because somebody is coming all the way and is driving up from Cape Town and will only arrive here tomorrow. So now look at the inconvenience. Or sometimes it's 10 hours journey. Now look at the inconvenience. Now they will have to prepare lunch for all those who have come. That person passed away. The family as it is, they are in grief and in sorrow. And the first concern is that we must put up a tent and we must give order for 2-3 degs because all these people are now going to have a good chow. Is it some kind of festival? Is it some kind of party? Some kind of walima? What is it? Yes, bring your family if there has to be because there's some relationship. Bring the family, go inside the house, convey your sympathy, condolence, and then walk out and then leave your family home again. Now this business of leaving our families there at that house until we have finished with the janaza. So now we leave the family from the morning and we pick up the family after Isha. Now they already had to be fed for lunch and supper, and thereafter the janaza then we're going to go and fetch them. Now look at the inconvenience to that family in that house. Yes, they're very immediate family members, they are there, alhamdulillah, not a problem. But here where the whole crowd is there and then the men folk are standing at the doorway. The ladies that are coming now, they can't even go through. They sometimes have to go through a passage which is on both sides, nothing but young men all talking all worldly affairs, or everybody is engaged in all kinds of gossip. And outside the house, there's nothing but gossip, gossip, gossip. And here inside the house, there's a janaza. Now this is taklif that we are causing. We don't even realize it. And we think that we did a great favor upon this deceased person, that we came to convey our sympathies and at least we showed that we too were there. Now, how many people can the small homes accommodate? How many people can the flats accommodate? And then again to stand on the pavement there and crowd the place up. Go away to the masjid, sit and read Yasin Sharif and send sawab to the deceased, that will be more sawab. Go to the masjid, go to the house, take some tasbih and read Yasin Sharif, read Quran Sharif, make some zikr and say, Ya Allah, the sawab of this, send it to the deceased. Send to my father who has passed away. I mean, my uncle or father, of course, the sons will be there. But my family member or my friend or somebody who has passed away. The same when it comes to the hospitals. The person is in ICU and look at the passageway. Everybody just wants to hang around there and talk and talk and talk and wait and wait and wait. What did he eat today? How much of urine did he pass today? Now everybody wants to know all the details of that patient in the passageway there. The person, if he went there and he can see that this is an ICU, and I say always, why do they call it ICU? Because generally is the person who is in the ICU, that is what he is. He says, I see you, you see me. He doesn't talk much. What else do we do in the ICU? He says, I see you, you see me, that's all. So make dua for the person and go away from there. Make way for the other people that are coming. They have to write notices and notices, only 2 visitors at a time. But where do we really consider all those things? For us, as if these things are not part of Islamic teachings. And that is where we are unable to convey any kind of message to those who do not believe in Islam. Because they see no difference. In fact, sometimes they find us more a problem than anything else. So this is a subject with which we can talk and talk and talk, and there are so many examples we can give. But this much at least we must take as a lesson, that when these type of occasions, in these type of the mayyats and other things that take place, then take into consideration those family members. Take into consideration the mayyat. Take our family, make taziyat, 5-10 minutes and out from there and go away. Never mind, let them say what they wish to say, that this person was not so much impressed, or he was not so much affected by the loss of my father or mother. Here what you are doing is making things easy for the others that are going to come. This is Islamic etiquette, Islamic morals, Islamic akhlaq. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq to make amal on it. And if a person makes the wasiyat, then generally people take into consideration wasiyat, that he made wasiyat, that was his last wish and last desire. So we should make that wasiyat, that in the event of my death, don't delay my janaza. Don't wait for people coming from all over the world. Bury me as quickly as possible according to the sunnah, so that I may be able to get the blessings of being buried according to sunnah. So therefore, on this Mubarak day of Jumu'ah, I'm also making that wasiyat, that in the event of my death, don't wait for anybody coming from around the world, wherever they may be, even if my own children are far, far away from here, as soon as the janaza is ready, of course I'm asking Allah Ta'ala to give me death in Madina Tayyibah every day. That's my dua. But I always say that, Ya Allah, if it is not destined there, wherever it may be, let it be in a state that you are pleased with us. So wherever it is, Hazrat Maulana Yusuf Rahmatullahi, Amir of the Jamaat, he said that if I pass away on the train, because he used to be always up and down in the Jamaat, he said, if I pass away on the train, this place where I pass away, don't even take me to the next station. The first station, find a burial place for me somewhere there. Look at the kind of wasiyat they made. If all of us introduce this slowly, slowly, then it will catch on and you'll see how easy it will make things for people. We won't have to prepare degs and degs and degs to feed the people that have come for janaza. May Allah Ta'ala give me, give you, and the ummat at large, tawfiq of amal, wa akhar da'wana, alhamdulillah.